is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington, and here's what's coming up on African News Tonight.
We are receiving continued allegations of serious abuses and violations of international human rights and international humanitarian law.
That's UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet on a new report saying all sides in the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region committed human rights violations. Details coming up. And also, Ethiopia declares a nationwide state of emergency. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. The office of Abdallah Hamdok, the Sudanese prime minister, ousted in an army coup last week, says he wants detainees released and the governing bodies restored before he will enter into a dialogue with the military. Reuters News says his office today denied reports that Hamdok has agreed to lead a new government. Hamdok has been under house arrest since the military ousted his cabinet and dissolved the civilian military transitional government on October 25th. Military Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan says the military acted because divisions in the transitional government were leading towards what he called a civil war. Burhan has said he wants to form a new government of technocrats and that Hamdok could return to lead it. Reuters reports the UN Special Envoy for Sudan said on Monday that Sudanese and international mediation efforts were expected to bear fruit in the coming days. Pro-democracy activists and the military formed the transitional government in 2019 after a peaceful uprising ousted longtime President Omar al-Bashir. The United States has been engaging with all sides in Sudan, as well as neighboring governments and Western partners, in an effort to restore the civilian-military partnership. The U.S. Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa yesterday said the United States understands there were issues with the progress of the transition, but that all issues could have been negotiated. Jeffrey Feltman told a news conference yesterday that offering Hamdok a role in the different government does not resolve the issues.
You know, General Burhan, in his statements, has said that he is committed to the Constitutional Declaration of 2019, that he's committed to moving toward elections, and all that's fine in terms, as far as statements go. And of course, Prime Minister Hamdok is an important player representing the civilian side of the civilian-military partnership. But this is more than just about Prime Minister Hamdok. It's about the military-civilian partnership that was forged out of that peaceful revolution in 2019. And it's about the spirit and the letter of what the military and the civilians agreed the transition should look like, how they would manage the transition.
Speaking via telephone to journalists around the world, Feltman said he has been encouraged by signs that Sudan's people want to peacefully resolve the crisis.
So we are encouraging the Sudanese themselves to think about how to restore the partnership and the constitutional arrangements right now. And we would be supportive of Sudanese solutions, and obviously the conversations that we're having with the Sudanese lay out some of our own what we would consider to be conditions to success, such as releasing all the detainees, as I said, allowing Prime Minister Hamdok to do his job, not under house arrest. Things like that.
The ambassador stressed that the U.S. condemns the military takeover of the government and wants to see other ways to address the military leadership's concerns about the transition. Ethiopia has declared a nationwide state of emergency as the year-long conflict that started in the Tigray region spreads. The rebels are claiming gains on several fronts and are threatening to take the capital Addis Ababa within months, if not weeks. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed stoked fears of chaos similar to Syria and Libya, saying the rebels are set to destroy a country, not to build it. Residents of the capital were ordered to prepare to defend their neighborhoods. The United States issued a do not travel warning for Ethiopia, citing armed conflict, civil unrest, communications disruptions, crime, and the potential for terrorism and kidnapping in border areas. The U.S. Embassy said its personnel are restricted from traveling outside of Addis Ababa city limits. The rebel surge comes as the Ethiopian military has launched airstrikes on the Tigray capital, Mekelle, saying they were hitting military targets. The UN has estimated that some 400,000 people are at risk of starvation in Tigray and the surrounding areas, and 4.5 million people are in dire need of aid. Aid agencies say their efforts to get food to the starving have been blocked by fighting and government restrictions. A joint probe by the United Nations and Ethiopian Human Rights Commission accuses all parties to the conflict in Ethiopia's northern Tigray province of committing human rights violations, some of which may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report covers the period from the start of the war last year on November 3rd until June 28, 2021, when the Ethiopian government declared a unilateral ceasefire. A team of 38 investigators visited various parts of Tigray to see the impact of the conflict and conduct a total of 269 confidential interviews with victims and witnesses. The investigation team cites a litany of violations and abuses carried out by all sides. These include unlawful killings and extrajudicial executions, torture, sexual and gender-based violence, including gang rapes. It also describes violations against tens of thousands of Eritrean refugees and the forced displacement of more than 2.5 million civilians. While the investigation has ended, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, says the atrocities of what she calls this senseless war continue and are escalating and spreading to other parts of the country. Every day, she says, more people are suffering and dying.
We are receiving continued allegations of serious abuses and violations of international human rights and international humanitarian law. There are reports of shelling and airstrikes resulting in civilian death, summary executions, large-scale displacement, and a worsening humanitarian situation.
The High Commissioner says the blocking of humanitarian aid to civilians has resulted in some 5 million people suffering from acute hunger, with 400,000 on the verge of famine. Bachelet says most of the violations appear to have been committed by Ethiopian and Eritrean forces. However, she notes that since the cutoff date of the investigation, an increasing number of allegations of human rights abuses by Tigrayan forces have been reported as well.
A key concern of our report is due accountability. National authorities have the primary responsibility to deliver fair and independent proceedings that address the full range of violations identified rather than isolated individual instances. It is crucial that the governments of Ethiopia and Eritrea ensure that those responsible for serious human rights violations are held accountable, regardless of the affiliation of the perpetrators.
Eritrean Information Minister Yamane Meskel called the report utterly false in a tweet Wednesday. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said he accepted the report despite some serious reservations. He noted that it did not accuse his government of genocide or using food as a weapon. Abiy said a joint civilian-military task force would be set up to investigate the report's allegations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Security Council has extended the UN mission to Western Sahara mandate for another 12 months. The resolution included several important provisions that were favorable to Morocco and presented setbacks for Algeria and the Polisario. Algeria suspended diplomatic ties with Morocco in August, accusing an independence movement in Morocco's Berber region of playing a role in forest fires protests in Algeria. The situation escalated with suspension of the gas pipeline to Spain across Morocco. William Lawrence, a professor of political science and international relations at the American University in Washington, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi that the rising escalation could lead to war.
We have had steady escalation for a year now and no mitigating factors. So if you mean by, you know, predicting a resolution here, it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. What will bring about de-escalation? Each country will have to see that it's better to have good relations and not have a war than this standoff. The last break in diplomatic relations lasted 12 years. And every time there's been either a break in diplomatic relations or a closure of the border or a war, like in 1963 or 1978 between the two countries, it was peace talks that ended it, direct peace talks. And right now, not only are there no peace talks between the two countries, but Algeria is refusing to partake in roundtable discussions on the Western Sahara issue sponsored by the UN and called for again with the renewal of the MINURSO mandate for 1 year, which is the UN mission to Western Sahara. So there'd have to be talks for de-escalation. There's no sign of the talks now, of any sort of talks. And rather, the countries are on a war footing. Algeria has been participating in military movers in South Ossetia, next to Russia. Morocco's been participating in military preparations with Israel and bringing in more Israeli technologies and working with Israeli special forces. And a lot of people don't realize that the ceasefire in Western Sahara broke down a year ago, mid-November of 2020, prompted by the shift in relations around the issue. First, it started with some protests and Morocco incursions onto the Western Saharan side, and then with U.S. recognition of Western Sahara, that set Morocco on a path whereby, and much more aggressive with the Europeans about recognizing their claims and supporting the American point of view. And there's been, of course, multiple standoffs at the UN as well. And lately, Russia and Tunisia had backed Algeria at the UN Security Council on the issue as Algeria is trying to push the envelope a little bit and say the Saharan right to self-determination needs to be on the table rather than just endless talks that go nowhere sponsored by the UN. And so all the moves seem to show that all the sides prefer a low-intensity conflict rather than peacemaking. And the fear here among all the people that watch this conflict is that a cold, low-intensity conflict could turn into a hot war, either intentionally or unintentionally, and that would bode very badly for the populations of the region.
Such tension between Morocco and Algeria, how different would be the mission of the new UN envoy to the Western Sahara?
After years of no envoy and a disagreement over who should be the envoy, one of the few concessions Morocco has made to the international community was accepting the new envoy after months of trying to block him. And it was with the U.S. pushing of the issue that they needed to have an envoy in order for peacemaking to be possible, with the breakdown of the ceasefire for a year now, that we've had progress. But Stephen de Mistura is a good diplomat, is respected by all sides, was accepted by Paul Azario, and has a reputation as a decent man who can accomplish things, still failed in his last peacemaking roles, envoy roles for the UN related to Syria and other conflicts. And I suspect he'll be there more to tamp down and manage the situation rather than have a breakthrough. It was Kohler, the previous envoy, that set up these roundtables, which have gone nowhere. They're basically just opportunities for each side to point fingers at the other side and state their claims rather than make any concessions. You know, I've long advocated that there needs to be some kind of power sharing relationship here, since Morocco has de facto control and could have a role in the future if the Saharans have some control over their own independence, over their sovereignty, something Morocco doesn't want to give them. But think about it. You have tens of thousands of refugees in the middle of the desert suffering in these circumstances in their fifth decade of exile. And there's been this ceasefire since 1991 that broke down a year ago, and missile attacks and populations under threat, and really no progress, just a war of words between the two countries and accusations that aren't true. So Algeria is accusing Morocco of setting fires. It's not true. Morocco is accusing Algeria of working with Hamas to provide missiles to terrorists, which isn't true. And these escalations are scary, including recent speeches in the two countries, basically preparing the population for war, which is never good. So hopefully the new UN envoy can tamp down on that escalatory rhetoric and escalatory actions and will avoid a war.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science and international relations at the American University in Washington, speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Al-Shenawy. South Africa's ruling African National Congress, or ANC, is desperately trying to hang on to power in cities and towns across the country after it took a hammering in local government elections. With most ballots counted, the ANC has 46% of Monday's vote, dipping below 50% for the first time since Nelson Mandela led it into government in South Africa's first democratic elections in 1994. Analysts and opposition parties claim the results show the ANC's almost 30-year grip on power is ending. Darren Taylor reports.
One of South Africa's most experienced politics professors, Susan Boysen, says the poll results represent a tectonic shift in the political landscape.
We're seeing huge dents in ANC's dominance. If it had been a national election, of course, the ANC would probably not have had the outright majority. It could have been a coalition then, but it isn't a national.
South Africa's municipal polls are usually a good indication of how national elections play out. In that context, says Boysen, the ANC has reason to panic as the country builds towards a national presidential vote in 2024.
Big provinces, Gauteng, last time in a provincial election, it was just 50%, marginally outright majority for the ANC. If it was a provincial election now, the ANC would have gone below that. And in the flagship ANC province of KwaZulu-Natal, the projections, CSIR, definitely show we're going towards a minority for the ANC there.
The ANC says it'll partner with any party except its bitter rival, the Chief Opposition Democratic Alliance, the DA. The DA, which at this stage has around 22% of the vote, says it's not willing to form coalitions with the ANC and the Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF, which has around 10% of the vote. DA leader John Steenhuisen says he's willing to talk to any other party to reach the DA's goal of controlling more councils.
We're going to make an offer to them and say, if you want to come into government with us, we can do it. We can. These are the options. Here's the coalition agreement. These are the values and principles. But what I'm not going to be doing is running around compromising DA core values and principles just to get into government. If we're not able to put together a coalition in those municipalities, I'm very happy for us to go on and be an excellent opposition like we are in Parliament.
The EFF says it'll consider alliances with all other parties except the DA, which it says is racist and in bed with white capitalists. Leader Julius Malema says he's looking forward to helping poor people get free basic services such as electricity.
We think we've amassed the necessary experience and we've got men and women who are now capable enough to can lead successful municipalities. Be rest assured, after these local government elections, there will be metros with EFF mayors.
Waiting in the wings as South Africa's three biggest parties trade insults are a long list of tiny parties with whom the big three could also soon be cooperating to get into power in municipalities. One of those is Action SA, which received the third most votes in Johannesburg. If spokesperson Lerato Ngobeni is to be believed, the ANC will soon be out of power in the country's biggest city.
We've declared corruption public enemy number one. The African National Congress, now no South African can deny, it's a corrupt organization. And so we're not willing to work with that. We don't want to be compromised ourselves. And so we're willing
But if the past is anything to go by, coalitions won't mean better services. Last time out, the marriages of convenience disintegrated into political and ideological battles, and the water and electricity cuts deepened, the roads continued to crumble. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
As the number of unemployed South Africans continues to grow and the jobless become more restless, the government says it is finalizing legislation that will enable locals to take over certain types of jobs currently being done by foreign nationals. The government has outlined plans to limit the number of foreign nationals working in certain economic sectors, expand the list of critical skills for which they can be employed, and ban them from driving South African registered trucks. Tusoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
In the second quarter of this year, South Africa's unemployment rate grew from 32.6% to 34.4%. That is close to 8 million people unemployed. However, when the number of those who have given up looking for jobs is added, the expanded unemployment rate sits at an uncomfortable 44.4% for a total of 11.9 million people. Initially, this led to targeting of foreign drivers, looting of foreign-owned businesses, and xenophobic violence. However, the recent indiscriminate looting of shopping malls, banks, and other businesses seems to have prompted government action. Labor Minister Tula Sinxele told reporters his department is finalizing a policy to limit the number of foreign nationals employed in non-critical skills areas such as restaurants, hotels, private security, agriculture, retail, and many others.
These employers, they employ the foreign nationals not because they love them. They employ them in order to undermine the labor standards. They employ them because they know they are very desperate. They are ready to take anything. Even if it means the rate is going at 50 rand, they can employ them at 5 rand.
Speaking at the same media briefing, Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi revealed that the government is working on a new critical skills list with the only jobs where foreign nationals can be employed if no qualified South African is available.
These skills like driving and all that are not on the list of critical skills, definitely not. And we do not foresee a situation where even in the new one, there will be.
Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula sought to reassure local truck drivers who have frequently protested the employment of foreign drivers in the sector.
The amendment to the regulations are now before Parliament for comment as required by law, and we anticipate to publish amended regulations by the end of November 2021.
South Africa is host to millions of foreign nationals who have left their countries to seek employment, with most lacking critical skills. Nqabutho Mabena, an executive member of the African Diaspora Forum and chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, told VOA that the government's move will be a blow to many migrants.
In coming up with a quota, would as the African Diaspora Forum want to engage with the Minister of Labour and the other stakeholders, because it is becoming clearer to us that the issue might not necessarily be presence of foreign nationals in the industry because the numbers are low.
The government has said it won't implement any discriminatory policies and will ensure that foreign nationals with permission to work in South Africa enjoy the full protection of the Constitution. Tusoko Malo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05